Hello and welcome to another episode of Right Thing with me, David Curtin. And I have a fantastic guest on the show today, who is Mads Palsvig, who is the leader of the Prosperity Party in Denmark. Mads, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, David. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, really good to see you. Now, I must confess, Mads and I have known each other for about 5 years. We were founding members of the World Freedom Alliance. We just had a quick conversation about that. And that was something that gave us so much hope back in the days of lockdown before injections came in and the terrible times of 2020, 2021, where, you know, travel was shut down, essentially. That was a while ago. But I did want to come on to something that's related to that, first of all, which is free speech. I mean, we were fighting for our freedom of assembly, freedom to move, and freedom to open businesses then. But we've sort of got that back after 2022, when the lockdowns ended. But we always talk about free speech. And I think that the right has been... the political right, if you know, I don't know what you think of that term, but the political right has been the greatest advocate for free speech over the last 20 years or so, when the political left, whatever you like to call that now, has tried to close it down. There's something I have seen which I find quite disturbing at the moment, which is to do with the situation in the Middle East. And people on the right have always said, you know, quoting Voltaire's maxim, I hate what you say, but I defend to the death your right to say it, are suddenly not defending to the death the right for Palestinian, pro-Palestinian marchers in European cities and American cities to have free speech. And indeed, are saying and smearing those people who I think are just marching against slaughter in Gaza, but they're calling them hate marches and terrorist marches. And I find that a very disturbing departure from people I've known who have supported free speech, who are now advocating against free speech for that group of people that they don't like. Now, I just wonder, Mads, is that something that you've noticed in Denmark or countries near you like Germany? And what do you think is causing that?
Well, I don't think it is as bad in Denmark, and I think part of it is probably because when organizations like ours, when we write newsletters, occasionally we send it to the entire Danish deep state. So we have spent years, and we started 9 years ago, and we gathered all the emails for all the people working in the parliament, of course, 2,000 journalists, all the school teachers, the university professors, people that are working in the ministries, the health departments, the police, the judges. So occasionally we do send out very, very heavy truth bombing newsletters directly into their emails. And why I do believe that is so important is because it is something that Matthias Desmet talks about to stop the mass formation. It's very important that someone speaks out, because it stops the worst kind of Bolshevik atrocities against the population. And if nobody speaks out, then it will just go become like in Mao's China or in Stalin's Russia, and that where there's no hold barred, right? So that is that. And going back to what you said about the right, I mean, it's quite ironic that Robert Kennedy Jr. is famously saying that it was never the good guys who censored free speech. And now he's part of the team who's doing it, and he's very, very quiet. And I have been in, as you know, I've been in touch with at some point I worked very close with the Children's Health Defense, and I had from reliable sources that basically Robert Kennedy said in November, he came out with a huge mistake, do what it takes to, you know, he could be misinformed, whatever. But it is like this: once you give the devil the little finger, he will take your whole arm. Mm-hmm. And now it's just difficult. Now he says that he just has to go with it now. But he should go out and say he made a mistake. That's what he should be doing. So, and I also, another thing that pops into my mind is, I remember in Australia during the COVID, a man running on the beach, not without a mask, and 8 police officers chasing him down, cuffing him, jailing him. Now, if I had been in Australia, 1 hour after that would have happened, I would have filed a request for a demonstration on a Danish beach where we would all be walking without wearing a mask.
Mm.
Yeah. And that is what how we managed to be the first country in the world who opened up after COVID, the first country to prohibit injecting children under 18 with vaccines, and this is by clever activism, because they can jail one man, but it only works if that makes people so afraid of walking on their dog on the beach or jogging on the beach without a mask that nobody is doing it. But if the whole population walks on the beach, what are they going to do? They can't jail everybody. And then the whole house of cards fall apiece. But that involves the individual citizen. It's not a ping pong match between freedom fighters and the deep state. It is all of us against the deep state, who clearly lied during COVID. Everybody knows that now.
Yeah.
The vaccines were not safe. They were not tested. Didn't protect against COVID, and it didn't protect against contagion. So,
yeah, I think now everybody realizes that something was very wrong with lockdowns. Something is very wrong with these injections. I don't call them vaccinations. That's the word they tried to get us to use, but they're not vaccinations in the traditional sense. They're gene technology injections. But even the people who supported them now are actually realizing that, well, there's something really wrong with them. People are dying. But I wish more people had spoken up at the time. I mean, you did and I did. But something you mentioned, which I think is very interesting, is this concept of gaslighting by silence. And I suppose you could apply it to that situation where so many people kept silent and didn't speak out. And then we have now 5.5 billion people in the world injected with this stuff, which is potentially going to injure or kill them. I mean, can you say more about this concept? Do you think that was a situation where that applied, and are there other situations where that applies as well?
Yeah, I think it is so important. It was just something that a video my son, who is a psychologist, sent to me, Gaslighting by Silence, and it was just like an epiphany. That is a good way of explaining why it is everybody's duty to fight in their way. And I don't have a recipe. I'm not going to tell anybody how they are supposed to fight. A lot of people don't like the way I talk. I'm maybe a little bit too strong, too certain in my assessment. And other people are doing it differently. And I can't say that I have success with everything. No, I can't say that. But clearly, I have had some success with some people. And some people find me terrible and horrible and don't like my way of talking, and that's also fine. But then they should go out and show how they can do it in a more gentle and more kind way first. Maybe we all have to do it. I mean, if someone tells something that clearly is a lie, and you're in a group of people and you know that it's a lie, and you don't speak out, then you are gaslighting by your silence, because the other people will be going like, let's say like you and I, David, when we were speaking out against the COVID crimes, and let's say we are in a group of people, and we say to some people, and the normal reaction with people is, but if David and Mats are right about this, our journalists would have been talking about it. Our politicians would have been talking about it. This was something that a lot of people said. I'm sure your viewers can remember that during COVID. It cannot be true, because someone would have told us. It cannot be true. They trust the journalists. They trust our politicians. And the thing is, they are all corrupt. I can say that with 100% certainty, 2,000 journalists in Denmark after 9 years, I know for a fact there's not a single good journalist in Denmark. And there's not a single good politician in Denmark. It's different in Germany, where they have Alternative for Deutschland. Oh, yeah. And I know there's you in England and a few others in England. And there are in Holland, there's a political party. So I'm not saying in all of Europe, but I can say with 100% certainty after 9 years that I have been red pilling and black pilling and truth bombing all 179 politicians in 9 years. They are lying in the floors. They are not standing, any of them, and they are lying for sure. So so they are not going to support the people. So what they're doing with people like you and me, and I'm sure you agree, you can probably add to it, but one of the things is the ad hominem attack. That's easy.
Yes.
David is a crazy conspiracy theorist. Mads is whatever. He is also a horrible person. Mm. That's the attack. And people don't want to be around horrible people. They want to be belong to something that is successful and acceptable to the society and so on. And since since the press is writing we are horrible people, they don't want to be talking to us. So that works very well. But the other one is this gaslighting by silence. So when we come out with our newsletters or make videos, the public will be going, but if that is true, what David and Mads is saying, then it should be 7 o'clock news tonight. And I haven't seen any, so can it be true? And this is why this gaslighting by silence, it works wonders for them. It really does. And then people always have an excuse not to talk about it. Let's say someone comes with an uncomfortable truth. You are at work, you are in the lunch break, or you're with the family. We all know we shouldn't talk about politics or during family dinner. But for some reason, it's okay to recite lies they heard on television. Or when you are at a family dinner, your uncles, your aunts, your cousins, and everybody are allowed to recite the government propaganda. You can do that. But what they mean when they say don't talk politics, they mean, no, you shouldn't disagree with the agreed official propaganda. That's what they really mean, right?
Yeah. Only one view is allowed, basically. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So and my point there is just that if we know something that isn't true, then we have to say it. We have to say it. So for example, give you a hard-hitting one. 6 million died. Just say no, they didn't.
Right.
That's enough. Yeah. Well, they didn't.
The thing is,
when they ask, Auschwitz the concentration camp museum director should be jailed because they changed the numbers first from 4 million, then to 1.5 million, then down to 500,000, and even in 1991, then when they opened the archives in the Soviet Union, finally, it went down to 73,000, and it was published in Jewish-owned New York Times in the early 1990s. So if that is the case, and then you can also use sense of humor in the 20 countries where you'll be jailed for what I just said. You'll get 5 year jail in a lot of countries for what I just said. So what you could do instead is, I think that there should be higher punishment for Holocaust deniers. I think that the management on Auschwitz concentration camp should be jailed, not 5 years, minimum 10 years, for changing the numbers of people who died in Auschwitz from 4 million to 70,000. I think that is totally unheard of. So you can use sense of humor instead. They cannot jail you for more, wanting more Holocaust, right? So you can just make it over the top. And then you can choose from that way. And legally, I have a master's degree in law. What are they going to do?
Right, yeah. You're using their system against them in a way, aren't you? And it is really, you know, one of those things. I've alluded to that. You know, there was a woman I think who was put in prison in Germany for Holocaust denial, and I said, well, she shouldn't be put in prison for that. Everyone should have the freedom of speech to talk about anything in history and offer any opinion as they see fit. And then I immediately had people calling me an anti-Semite, which is the smear that they use if anyone goes against the narrative. But I actually think that's wearing off now. I think that's been a very, very powerful spell on people for 70 or 80 years, but it's wearing off now and people are not so afraid to question it, because it is obvious, you know, that we're told this 6 million figure, and initially the components of that 6 million figure added up, but now they don't. Now they only add up to something that's a tiny fraction of 6 million, but they haven't revised that figure downwards. So no one can give a good answer apart from, you're an anti-Semite, you're a Holocaust denier, go to jail. that.
Yeah, that's funny. And they can't call me an anti-Semite because my wife is Jewish. So they really struggle hard there, right? 35 years married, three kids, one grandson, one more grandson on the way. So it's difficult to call me an anti-Semite. And I'm more like a kind of guy who's against lying and against against extorting Germans for something they didn't do. I'm very much against that. And and also the way they treated the Germans with bombing civilians deliberately before 1940, when the Jewish Frederick Lindemann sort of persuaded the Jewish Churchill to bomb the Germans, that hadn't been done before. Because it is illegal to bomb civilians is illegal. But then you can see that changed when they started bombing civilians in Germany. Then it was civilians in North Korea and Japan and Vietnam, and then it was Afghanistan and Iraq and Somalia and Libya and now Gaza. So what they're doing in Gaza now is because they started doing it against the Germans in 1940s. So this started a new Talmudic world order where bombing civilians is okay, and that's not okay in Christianity. I mean, we are against killing other people, but if there is a war, there are rules of engagement. It's a soldier versus a soldier, and if he surrenders, he has to have the same food as your own soldiers, and you cannot execute a soldier just for fighting and protecting his own country. You're not allowed to do that. There are rules, and they are all broken now. So, and with this anti-Semite thing, I think it's a badge of honor now, considering how they are treating. I'm talking about the Hollywood version of an anti-Semite, because obviously I'm a philo-Semite. My wife is Jewish. My Jewish banking friends are Jewish. I think somewhere between a quarter and one third of the people I speak most to are either Jewish or half Jewish or quarter Jewish. I mean, so I'm a philo-Semite, and I'm also the Palestinians are the true Semites, and I'm really, really, really on their side. I really, really, really am. So
yeah, well, not everyone who is an ethnic Jew is for this genocide in Gaza. I mean, obviously you've got Netanyahu, he's got a lot of support within the nation of Israel. He's got a lot of support in the United States as well from some people. Well, we'll get into that in a minute. But not everyone who is a Jew is for that. Some Jews are against the genocide in Gaza. For example, Jeffrey Sachs. You're a great man, very, very intelligent man. And I go to him for commentary on what's really happening in the Middle East and what's really happening in terms of policy and decision-making behind the scenes. And, you know, some of it goes back to Wesley Clark's statement in 2003 that they needed to go to war with seven countries in the Middle East, ending up with Iran, starting with Iraq and Syria, Lebanon, Libya, etc., and then finally going to Iran. And you see people in Israel champing at the bit to get America to go to war with Iran, which I think would be an absolute disaster. But then anyone who questions this is automatically smeared as an anti-Semite, which is ridiculous. But I mean, this is very concerning to me and a lot of people at the moment, quite rightly so, that I don't like to comment on the Middle East because it's, you know, it's not really my issue. I'm here in the UK. I care about the UK, but this is 3,000 miles away. But this is going to affect everybody if there's a conflict that blows up into a world war and a nuclear war. And, there is this pressure to get people to conform, to support Israel and to be against Iran through very clever nudging and psychological manipulation. I mean, do you see that in where you are as well?
Yes, of course. And I was raised a Zionist as well. I was a Zionist until 7 years ago, until my son-in-law had a sit down, and he forced me, manhandled me to go and look into the details about the Palestinian issue. I had to admit he was right, I was wrong. So, I mean, we are all mind controlled and brainwashed to a certain extent about these, because the power of the media and the educational system is so huge. But I just want to also to confirm what you just said. I want to also to kind of bring to the table, Haaretz, a mainstream newspaper in Israel, is highly critical of the genocide in Gaza. And I'm sure the editor of Haaretz would be jailed if he went to America. It's wow. It's ironic. But in Israel, he's actually able to come out and post these things. So that is very interesting. But this is now like the man running on the beach in Australia. And Australia had one of the toughest lockdowns on the planet because they did not react when he was jailed. When the man on the beach was jailed, the Australians stayed home. So that they should have been more active. And the same thing happens now in America. When you have a foreign student who's not even demonstrating anything, just part of a group who support on social media who supports the Palestinian cause, being jailed and sent into detention centers. It's happening now. I mean, you had a professor with tenure at a university in America who in the open street was jailed by policemen in civilian clothing. Can you imagine how afraid she must have been? And then she was flown 2,000 miles to the south into a detention center. And in my knowledge, she's still there. And she's not the only one. There are people who just came to America from other countries, and they looked at their social media, and they've been jailed as well. So this is really, really, really bad. And this is not happening under Biden. This is happening under Trump. The alleged man who is supposed to respect the U.S. Constitution and be a man of honor and a man of free fighting for freedom. It's not good.
I know. It does disturb me because, again, this is something that agitates against free speech and from people who say they support free speech in any other context. And what we're seeing, I think, is this document from the International Holocaust Remembrance Association. They've got this definition of anti-Semitism that they want to put into law. And they went around places. They've been doing this for 10 years, trying to get everybody to sign up to this and saying, this is voluntary. It's not going to affect you. But actually, the plan I could see is that, well, eventually what they want to do is get so many businesses, so many councils, governments, police forces, etc., to sign up to this definition. And then a few years down the line, they're going to say, oh, look, we've got so many hundreds of thousands of organizations all around the world have signed up to this definition of anti-Semitism. Now we need to make this law because everyone agrees with it. And they are starting to make it law in some places in America. I think starting with South Dakota, and then President Trump somehow one of the things that is going through is going to make this law on campuses, and this pressure to make this law. So, and it actually lists certain things that they deem anti-Semitic. For example, saying that there are Jews that support Israel more than they support America. Well, it's obvious that there are some that do that. There are so many dual citizens in the government and in the bureaucracy that actually support Israel more than the United States. Their prime allegiance is to Israel. But if you say that, you're deemed anti-Semitic, and then you could get into trouble for the law for saying something that is truthful. And this really is an attack on free speech, I think.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can do many other things, but two things that spring to mind is, of course, one of them is make a demonstration against it. Mm. A political party. If you are a politician, I can see you have a little bit more rooms to maneuver. If you are a U.S. politician, you make a demonstration against this law. You can still do that in America, I think. That's one way of doing it. All this sarcasm. You go, I think it is disgusting that there are still members of U.S. Congress who are not dual citizens. They are clearly anti-Semites. Stuff like that, right? Just all the top sarcasm, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, one thing that I wanted to come back to from before is, talking about the United States and to a lesser extent in Europe is Christian Zionism. And it was interesting you said just earlier that you were brought up a Zionist. I was, I suppose, without even realizing it, because I went to evangelical churches. I consider myself an evangelical Christian in terms of I believe in sola scriptura, etc., sola gratia, that the scripture is the prime authority, the word of God in Christianity. But some evangelicals have taken on this idea that they must support Israel because Israel is, this is God's plan. The Jews are really God's people. The Christians are God's people, but the Jews are really God's people. They're more God's people than the Christians. And that's not actually in the Bible. It's just something that somebody made up. And they've made up this whole theology, and then it's spread around without people actually referencing what the Bible actually says, you know, in truth. But this is very dangerous because I think you've got tens of millions of people in the United States who are Christian Zionists who haven't seen through this yet. And they will support Israel no matter what it does, no matter what they do to the Gazans, the Palestinians, or what they do in Lebanon and Syria, no matter how much they want to go with Iran, they will support Israel almost like because they believe it's the right thing to do, even if it leads us into World War III. And I'm challenging that, and I'm getting some people saying, thank you for speaking out, like you say, you know, you've got to speak out against these things in real time, because if you wait, it doesn't get any challenge. But I get some people saying, oh, well, I'm not going to support you anymore because you're going against God. Just like, no, because you're wrong. I say you've been soaked in this false doctrine of dispensationalism and Christian Zionism, which is not biblical. And you need to stop supporting a genocide and really winds people up. But you've got to go and say this because we've got to break the spell over so many people, so many millions of people who are supporting this genocide erroneously. I don't know if you come across that idea.
I mean, Jesus talked about the synagogue of Satan. You know, he said it clearly. And I mean, it is the opposite of Christianity. I mean, we have in our commandments that we're not allowed to lie. We don't have an annual religious event where we remind ourselves, we just know we're not allowed to lie. You're a Christian, you're not supposed to lie. But the Talmud following Jews, they have an event in October called Kol Nidra, where they promise to break all vows to Goyim people, to the non-Jewish people. So they deliberately remind their subjects that it's okay to lie to non-Jewish people. So I have a huge problem with this, and it has been reading the Talmud. I mean, kill the Gentiles, even the best of them. Raping Gentile women is okay. I mean, we need to stop this Talmudic world order that started in 1941 with the bombing of the German cities. They just have to be separated. And the Jewish media in America and in Europe have been very strong in this separation of church and state. So getting rid of all the Christian traditions, so we can't have a Christmas tree, we can't have all the whatever traditions we have, because we don't want to offend someone who's not. Well, they came to our country, for God's sake. They want to live in Denmark, they want to live in America. I mean, they should be respectful of our culture, and they want to be here, and they say, oh, the Danes do it this way, we do it that way, and we can invite each other, and we could see their party there, and they can see ours. We'll just be friends. That's how I think it should be. But why should they be allowed to come and then stop it all? So they've been very successful in that, and I think now we need to send the boomerang back. We need to separate the synagogue and state. We cannot. I mean, they should not be allowed to make propaganda in Hollywood. They should not be allowed to lie in the educational system, and they should definitely not be dual citizens in any government. If their allegiance is with Israel, they should go back to Israel.
Absolutely. This is the Talmud. That's a very important thing, because I was not even aware of the existence of the Talmud until I was about 50 years old. You know, I've gone through most of my life. I only found out about it like 3 or 4 years ago, and I started looking into it. And it's like, oh my goodness, it says absolutely horrendous things. But do you think that some people are actually trying to implement the maxims of the Talmud? You know, it's almost like a two-tier society where Goyim are considered less than humans. And is that being enacted in law in Western countries?
we just had von der Leyen out on when I think it's probably an older video, but von der Leyen said Europe is the Talmud. She said that. And I posted it first and I said, this is not good. It could be AI, I wrote. And then there was a plethora of comments below with the actual speech. She did say it. I have the whole video, and I also have the website where the her whole speech is written, and it's halfway down. She said, the Europe is a Talmud. And if I remember correctly, her husband is Jewish. She's not Jewish herself. Mm. So that is the unelected chairwoman of the European Commission says EU is the Talmud. I have a huge problem with that.
Mm. Yeah, I think anyone who actually knows what the Talmud says, and the Noahide laws, for example, that's another part of the Talmud which really isn't good for anybody who's Christian and or not religious, and you don't want them implemented. That really isn't good for the leader of the European Commission to be saying that. It's certainly not. But you've given one solution, which is to speak up when you see something happening, like when you see the Australian on the beach with the mask being arrested by 8 policemen, when you see free speech being undermined, and when you see people smearing free speech when they would support it in any other context. But I mean, you and I are both involved in politics. We've both set up political parties in our respective countries. Is that something that you think is a big part of the fight back against these, is what you would say is the Talmudic world order?
So is setting up a political party, is that what you're asking about?
Or? Yeah. Is getting involved in politics important?
I think it is important, and I know you agree because we spoke about it, but I think it is important to stay in the system. A lot of people say that the system is bad. It's the system's fault. No, it's not. It's the fault because the people who are running the system are deeply corrupt, deeply, and they are lying, and they are traitors, and they are collaborators. The system is beautiful. We want more of the system. We built it over hundreds of years, and the UK and Denmark has a lot in common in terms of that, because we have a huge tradition in trial by jury. Is very, very integral to freedom, that it's not some government official who decides whether you're guilty. It's your peers who goes in. Let's say you and I have an argument, then we go to trial, and 10 or 15 or 5 people, whatever it is, they listen to what you say, listen to what I say, and then end of story. And that is how justice is done. It is common sense. Was David right? Was Matt right? Can we have a compromise? And then, boom. And we both agree, walking into this court, we both agree to accept it. And no, I don't start killing your children. You don't start killing my children. We accept this decision. And it's some foundation of our civilization. So if people would be speaking out more, then they would eventually, of course, vote for politicians like you and me, and we could change the system. I strongly believe that, but we are not there. We are far from it. I mean, during COVID, I think if being nice, I would say 1 in 1,000 did anything, and I'm being nice. It's probably more like 1 in 10,000, because 1 in 10,000, that's 570 people. And I don't think we were even close to being 570 people. I mean, the people, we pushed above our weight because we were very active, but I mean, we'll go shopping without mask. So one guy comes in without mask, then another one, and then another one. So we would be, just fooling all the people by all these people going out without masks. So it just things like that. But we were so few people. We were so few. And people need to take more responsibility. Do they want to have this atrocious future that is planned for them, where they own nothing, they are going to eat bugs, they're living in 15-minute cities? They might have a universal basic income, but it'll be a central bank digital currency, which will be expiring in 1 month. You cannot save anything. Mm-hmm. And if you want to buy meat, you can only do it if you've been a good citizen and only, maybe so many grams a month. And you cannot buy petrol because you don't need to, because you're in a 15-minute city. And you can't travel, you can't this, that, and the other. If you want to live like that, then just continue doing what you're doing now, which is saying nothing. That's fine. But if you want freedom, if you want the U.S. Constitution, if you want trial by jury, if you want democracy, you want safety and security, you want a legal system that are protecting your rights, because that's not clearly not the case. Mm. Then people have to get more involved, and it begins at home. When someone is saying a lie, like 6 million died, start with saying no, they didn't. Mm. This is huge, because this lie was to begin with just to extort the Germans and to make the victors feel good about why they destroyed this beautiful country who was defending the world from the Jewish Bolsheviks, who had killed 60 million Christians. And they were actually the heroes. So they had to make this lie so huge and punish anybody speaking out against it. And this lie, this is the foundation of the Talmudic world order. So once we chop that lie away, we could get freedom. So it's very, very important.
Yeah, there's no Hollywood movie at all about the 60 million Christians who died at the hands of the Bolsheviks. It just doesn't exist, does it? So that says it all. Hollywood is a massive propaganda machine to control your mind, essentially, and to get you to think what the powers that be want you to think. I've now switched off completely from Hollywood, because I'm just so disgusted by how most of these Hollywood celebrities acted during the COVID period, and now also with the Epstein list, the P. Diddy list, and so on. You know, most of them are just absolute degenerates. I can't even watch a Hollywood movie anymore, because the people I used to think, oh, well, they were stars, I now just think, you are sick and disgusting. I just can't simply can't watch them. But yeah, Mads, I think you're absolutely right in what you say there. It's like people need to get involved and not wait for somebody else to do it. And that's the big problem I see in the UK, is that people are seeing this going on, but they're apathetic. Well, not everybody, because I do have people joining me in the Heritage Party. I'm really happy. We had 40 candidates, last year in the general election. We got local elections this year. We got 20 candidates standing and lots of people helping. And I'm sure you have in Denmark as well. And when elections happen, that you've got lots of candidates in various places and some people are helping you. So how is it going for your party, actually, in Denmark? Because I think you know, you say there's no politicians in Denmark that are fighting this system, but there is. There's you and your party and the people with you. How's it going for your party?
Yeah, no, I want to be honest. I mean, it is not going as well as it is for you, and I'm very glad that it's going well for you. Mm-hmm. People were very tired after the COVID, and I just want to go where I think I can make the biggest impact, and right now I think it's more on the global stage. Mm. Because of my background as an investment banker, and I've been advising the Federal Reserve and European Central Bank in private meetings and drinks and dinners, you know. And therefore I think that I should try to be more on the international stage and make videos and be on Twitter and stuff like that. So we're still active. We just had a board meeting here in my home on a few days ago. So we're still active. We're still writing our newsletters and we're there. But it was just after COVID. People were just so tired. Mm. And it just kind of, I don't know what happened. Yeah, so I just want to go where I think that I can make the biggest impact. But the Prosperity Party is still there. And if your viewers would go and follow me, my Twitter handle is Palsvik. And the reason I say this is because the pinned post, I put up five ways or five how you can remove income tax, remove corporate tax, and still have the same amount of revenue in the government. And that way you will totally remove poverty in any country in the world if you do the five steps I put up there. I just want to make it totally clear: the world is abundant. Mm. There is enough for everybody. If we stop using the money creation for bombing other people or buying these poisonous injections they inaccurately called vaccines. And if we still build infrastructure or even paid it out as citizen dividends, then the world would be so wealthy. And there are so many examples of this in history. Take Japan after World War 1945. I just every day is a new dead body under a stone. I mean, every day you learn something new about the atrocities. It turns out Hiroshima and Nagasaki was just two of the cities they carpet bombed. It turns out after they surrendered, the Allied forces killed 10 million civilian Japanese after they had surrendered. They labeled every single town in Japan. And we just hear about Hiroshima and Nagasaki. No, it was every single town. And yet, my point I'm trying to make is that in 45 years, they became the richest country in the world. Why? Because they produced money in the Ministry of Finance. So they basically said, if you work, the money's there. And they informed the banks. They gave them window guidance. So they said, without automatic manufacturing, you can maximum lend this much, but you have to minimum this one. And the minimum was very high. If people wanted a mortgage, yep. You have to create maximum this amount of mortgages, but minimum this amount, and the minimum is very high. So if anybody wanted to do anything, bam, the money was there. And that way, in 45 years, Japan went from being leveled. And remember, you can only grow food on 3 or 4% of the country's land. I mean, it's almost an impossibility to create wealth and abundance in Japan. And still, they did it, right? Because they're smart and they're hardworking people. So in 45 years, and then what happened in 1990? The international banksters flew in. Okay, I think this is going a little bit too well here in Japan. So they wanted an independent central bank. They started bribing all the politicians. They changed the regulations, and all of a sudden they had this independent Bank of Japan set up, and the Ministry of Finance stopped producing money. Richard Werner was a good friend of mine, an economist and former investment banker. He wrote Princes of the Yen, which turned out to become a bestseller. If people want to know more about it, and they can read that. But it's just an example of how abundant the world is when the government produce money to the benefit of the people, everything goes well. And here I want to say also a warning to your viewers. When this is how the deep state will act, I'm sure. When enough people know these facts about money creation and start demanding that the money creation is used to their benefit, they are going to come with central bank digital currency and universal basic income. So basically, they're going to bribe the voters. What they're going to do, I think, they're going to come out and say, before they start doing the real money creation for the people, they will say, okay, you can have $3,000 a month on a central bank digital currency. You can obviously not buy meat for it, and you cannot buy petrol, but it's really nice. All you have to sign up is this: if you don't take the vaccines, then you only get 2,000, and if you want to travel, you only get 1,000. Okay, but if you decide to stay in the 15-minute city and you decide not to speak out against the government propaganda, and you take all your vaccines, you get 3,000. I guarantee you, the gullible masses, so many of them will take it, especially if the people who are aware of what's going on is gaslighting them by their silence and not speaking out. So now we're back again.
Well, look, Mads, it's a really good point to leave it, because you've given us a positive end, that the world is abundant and it is possible for money to be created for the benefit of the people. But that comes with a warning as well, that we need to avoid these central bank digital currencies and universal basic income like the plague, because that is, you know, there's no point, because I think if, as you say, they're going to bribe you to take the more injections to get the maximum universal basic income. But if you do take the injections, you're probably going to die quite soon afterwards anyway. So, you know, it's a lose-lose if you go down that route. But we have got a way to win. And it goes back to Edmund Burke's famous maxim: all it takes for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. But you're Mads, you're a good man, and you're doing lots and lots of good things to raise awareness of how we can actually make the world free and abundant and prosperous. So it's really great to have you on the show, and thank you so much for joining me today, Mads.
Thanks a lot, Dave. Really a pleasure to talk to you again.